Good to see everyone this morning. Jack Bullard sends me a joke every now and then. I'm going to read one this morning. Now, I don't get it too often because it goes to junk mail. I don't check junk mail too often. Here's what this says. Listen very carefully. It says, an old geezer became very bored in retirement and decided to open a medical clinic. He put a sign up outside that said, Dr. Geezer's Clinic. Get your treatment for $500. If not cured, get back $1,000. Dr. Young, who was positive that this old geezer didn't know beans about medicine, thought this would be a great opportunity to get $1,000. So he went to Dr. Geezer's clinic. Dr. Young said, Dr. Geezer, I have lost all taste in my mouth. Can you please help me? Dr. Geezer said, nurse, please bring medicine from box 22 and put three drops in Dr. Young's mouth. Dr. Young said, this is gasoline. Dr. Geezer said, congratulations, you've got your taste back. That'll be $500. Dr. Young gets annoyed and goes back after a couple of days, figuring to recover his money. Dr. Young says, I've lost my memory. I cannot remember anything. Dr. Geezer said, nurse, please bring medicine from box 22 and put three drops in the patient's mouth. He says, oh, no, you don't. That's gasoline. He says, congratulations. You got your memory back. Only $500. Dr. Young, after having lost $1,000, leaves angrily and comes back after several more days. Dr. Young said, my eyesight has become weak. I can hardly see anything. Dr. Geezer said, well, I don't have any medicine for that, so here's your $1,000 back, giving him a $10 bill. Dr. Young says, but this is only $10. Dr. Geezer, congratulations, you got your vision back. That'll be $500. The moral of the story is just because you're young doesn't mean that you can outsmart an old geezer. Remember, don't make people mad. We don't like being old in the first place, so it doesn't take much to tick us off. Thank you, Jack. That's a long one. All right. We're studying in the book of Genesis, and today I hope to lay to rest a deviation that I've taken from Genesis chapter 10. The reason that I've taken so much time with that is because that it is so relevant to what is going on in our world today. Now, back in Genesis 10, we read about man's open rebellion against God. It was the first time in the history of the world that we read about an open rebellion against God. This was, of course, when Nimrod led a one-way migration to the land of Chaldea, Shinar, Sumer, those are all equivalent names. This would be down in lower Iraq, lower Mesopotamia. And we read now that God had to come down and bust that party up because they were attempting to lead the entire world away from God and to try to substitute for the true worship of God something in its place. And that's still going on and has been going on down through all of time since that time for about 4,500 years since that time. That's how long has transpired since that time. We read that that's still going on. We read in history that's still going on. And we know today that it's still going on. Well, idolatry, which is what the system was called in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, in its basic form, it actually is a question, who is going to control? Am I going to control or is God going to control? Am I going to try to control God? That's what it really fundamentally comes down to. And behind all of it is Satan and his agents. And we read that in the Bible, throughout the Bible, that that system that Satan has created has been an attempt to fulfill the dream of Nimrod to establish a one-world political, economic, and religious system that leaves God out of it. And we know that that's very prevalent today. Well, as we go through the Bible, the satanic system that we read about, God separated, and we hadn't got to that point yet, but in Genesis 12, we're going to find God separating one man. This idolatry had been carried all over the world. When God came down and dispersed those people and scattered them, they took with them this system of idolatry to every part of the world. And I'm going to cover that next week. And I'm going to, Lord willing, bring you a map that shows you where all the original people groups settled. And the original and the ones that came later, there were basically two waves of them. And that first wave went out to every part of the world and carried this idolatrous system with them. Now, when God separated one man from the Shemites, and He preserved this man and made a nation out of him to protect and preserve the truth of the living God, the true system of religion, we find that even then in the Old Testament that these people would come into contact from time to time with these pagan systems of idolatry and that they would contaminate them. And in fact, it got to be so bad that God had to severely chastise and discipline these people. And He has been doing that ever since. He sent them away into captivity in the Old Testament. They came back after 70 years. But when they came back a different people. No longer were they idolatrous like they were before, but now they had become extremely commercial. When we read in Ezra and Nehemiah what was going on in those times, we find that they had developed and picked up a spirit of commercialism. They'd been infected with a commercialistic spirit, and they were charging their brethren exorbitant interest, usury. And the Bible and the law forbids the Israelite to charge his fellow Israelite usury. I've got a daughter that recently talked to me about loaning her some money. Have you ever had a kid that came to you about loaning her money? And she was going to pay me back about a 20% or 25% return. I said, well, number one, I don't have the money. Number two, if I did, I would not charge you interest for it. I've never charged my kid interest. I might could go borrow some money for you, but at my age, they're going to look at me, and when I come through the door, I'm going to be a very poor risk. So I'm probably not going to get much. But anyway, these people have become very commercialistic. And you know the Jews. You know how they are. Any Jews in here? They have a very commercialistic, you know, because the Jews were scattered all over the world after the second dispersion, which occurred in 70 A.D. And that's interesting. They were sent into captivity 70 years. Then, after they came back and reestablished their commonwealth, in 70 A.D., they were scattered again, and they've remained scattered for 2,000 years. And then we are living in a period when we're witnessing a modern miracle today. They've been regathered in part, in unbelief, but nevertheless regathered to their homeland. And then, amazingly, we've got a president that doesn't just talk the talk, but he walks the walk and says, we're going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of the nation of Israel. Amazing, isn't it? We're witnessing some miraculous things. Even though Congress passed a law 20 years ago stating that the United States was going to recognize it, every president from that point since always signed a deferment and found some reason for deferring, not recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. But Jerusalem is the eternal capital of Israel, and it will be the eternal capital. There will even be a new Jerusalem that's coming down from God out of heaven. But at any rate, these people came back, and they have this spirit of commercialism. Now, as we talked last week, we talked about how the spirit of idolatry and the spirit of commercialism has permeated the world ever since. We talked about how that we get down into more recent times. The Crusades were fought to go and try to retake Jerusalem and reestablish the dream of Nimrod to have a one-world empire. Prior to that time, the church and the Germans had combined to try to put the old Roman Empire under new management, but it never did work out. And remember that Holy Roman Empire, just like we said grape nuts place is, neither grapes nor nuts, it was neither holy nor Roman. And finally, the last German emperor of it resigned that position in the early 1800s. But that didn't stop the world from still attempting to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. The Roman Empire crumbled, but it has never died. The idea has never died. And in Daniel chapter 2, we read about that great image that was the subject of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And you recall that those various metals represented various world empires. And it began with a head of gold, arms and breast of silver, thighs of brass, legs of iron, feet part of iron, part of clay. Interesting thing about that image, it was top-heavy. Because the heaviest metal was on top, the most precious metal was on top, and they got more degraded as it went down. Well, we're living in that time in which it may become a reality. They're trying awful hard to try to mingle the clay with the iron and put the old Roman Empire back together again. And Satan is using everything at his disposal. He's using a new form of idolatry, which actually is not worshiping idols like the lower civilizations did, not worshiping images, but we have substituted humanism. And we've substituted secularism. And we've substituted materialism. And we've substituted agnosticism and all of these things. And that's the religion that America embraces today. By and large, it embraces somewhat of a hybrid paganized Christianity, doesn't it? And a lot less on the Christianity and more on the paganization. We have deified human beings. That's what humanism is. The deification of man. That's what Nimrod did back in Genesis. Nimrod became deified. And then when he was brought to justice by Shem, as we read about in secular history, there's snatches here and there, Herodotus, Diodorus of Sicily, some of these. And we deduce from that how he died, that he died a violent death. And his body was cut in pieces just like that Levi did to his concubine in the book of Judges and sent it out all over Israel. Well, that was the story back in those days. But Nimrod's wife decided she would out-Nimrod Nimrod. And so she produced a child that she claimed was her son by her reincarnated dead husband. Now, she may have been a prostitute. I don't know how she got this kid. But it began a cult in the old world of worshiping a mother and a child. And in Canaan, that cult touched Israel when it became the form of Adonis or Tammuz. He was the child, and Astarte, the mother. And we recall reading in the book of Ezekiel how that in the temple, before God destroyed that building the first time, that he pulled back the curtain and let Ezekiel the prophet go in and look around. And in one secret chamber, there were women that were weeping for Tammuz. They were weeping 40 days because he had been killed, according to the legend, but he came back. He would come back to life after 40 days. And that old custom of weeping for 40 days became incorporated into church doctrine back in the Middle Ages and became the custom of Lent. Yeah. That's why that they fast for 40 days. And they don't even know where it came from. It's just like Halloween, you know. When I was growing up, Halloween was great fun. It was a time to scare somebody. I didn't know where it came from. Had no clue about all of that. All I know is I put a mask on and I can scare somebody good, you know. But there's a lot of these things that people don't investigate where they came from. This was going on right in the very precincts of the temple. And then he took us into another chamber, and there were 70 men in there, and they were facing the east and worshiping the sun. So idolatry had touched Israel to the point that it had corrupted her, so that God had to cleanse the land and remove her out of the land for 70 years and let the land be cleansed and purged. And we read about it in the New Testament that idolatry still prevailed in those times. In Corinth, you recall how that there were some had been saved out of idolatry, but they hadn't quite got loose from it. You know, I knew a preacher one time that he was the biggest bootlegger and drunk, and he got saved, and he was a big old guy. And he got saved pretty good, except he didn't quite get away from some of his old language. And he became a preacher. And you had to watch him every now and then. He'd slip up. And he'd say, "Boy, that guy crossed me." And he said, "I told him, you do that again, I'm going to whoop H out of you." And people's faces shot up. You know. You had to watch old Big Jack McGaw. But at any rate, where was I going with all that? All right. Well, anyway, these people got saved in Corinth, but they didn't get released from some of their idolatry. And Paul had to write to them and tell them that you cannot serve two masters, and you cannot have fellowship at the table of devils and at the table of the Lord. And you're going to have to cut one of them off. I know you've got kin folks that still participate in that stuff, but you're going to have to be a testimony, he said. And did you know idolatry really is a worship of devils? It's called a worship of demons. It's also called covetousness. All of that goes into this system. And John wrote to his little children. He says, "Keep yourselves from idols." And then he closes his book. And so that system prevailed. And on into modern times, it just has changed its form. As nations have become more civilized, they don't consider a spirit in every stick and in every rock and behind every tree like they did in the primitive nations and in the uncultured nations. But we've just civilized the idolatry now to where that we elevate individuals and human beings and we worship them. We idolize them, as the saying goes. Well, parallel with that, there was also a movement to use religion to attempt to unify the world politically. That's what Constantine did back in 320 A.D. He became, quote-unquote, converted to Christianity. He didn't get baptized until he's on his deathbed because he still had some more sinning he wanted to do. So he felt like that baptism would kind of wash it all out, you know. So he put it off as long as he possibly could. But I believe the man did that for one purpose, and that was to unify the eastern and western parts of the Roman Empire, which were beginning to split apart. And he's not the first to ever do that. And that's what's going to happen in the end times, as we're going to read about in just a second. I'm getting there, so don't rush me. I do better work when you don't rush me. So at any rate, organizations began to spring up. The Crusades were fought to try to get Jerusalem back and put a king on Jerusalem so they could unite the world under Jerusalem once again. This was the church behind all this, the quote-unquote church establishment. And then there were others that came along in 1300 or so. There was a gentleman by the name, he founded an organization that was called Rosicrucians. Order of the Rosy Cross. Had one thing, one goal. It was a secret society, and that was to try to promote a one-world government. And then time goes by. There were other societies that formed. I told you last week that Freemasonry formed as a guild of craftsmen. It was a union, a trade union. You had to have a secret password to get in. It was a group of craftsmen that worked on the cathedrals of Europe. But then later, in the 1600s, there were Masons that were called speculative Masons. They weren't craftsmen at all. They just wanted to be part of a secret society. They kind of took over the trade union. Four lodges came together in England and formed the modern lodge that we know of today. Now, Masons do a lot of good stuff. They claim to be based and rooted in biblical things, but and on the lower level, A lot of good things are done in the name of masonry, but I'm afraid that from time to time, there have been powerful individuals that have taken over at the highest levels and used it as a front. You know, back in the 30s, we had a crime wave in this country, didn't we? And a lot of the gangsters in Chicago, they developed reputable businesses, but they were only fronts, weren't they? For other activities that were going on, prostitution, gambling, the numbers, all that kind of thing. So, throughout that time, in 1776, when we declared our independence here in America, in Bavaria, Adam Weishaupt, a professor at the University of Ingolstadt, he founded the Illuminati Society. What was the goal of it? To establish a one-world government. And then as we come more into modern times, we find that that movement began to pervade the British Isles, the Fabians. They were a British socialist. And out of that group came Cecil Rhodes. And you've heard of Rhodes Scholars, haven't you? We had a president who was a Rhodes Scholar, didn't we? Do you remember who he was?
Bill Clinton.
Well, Scott Rhodes, Cecil Rhodes made his fortune in diamonds in South Africa and set up all these scholarships, but he was a British socialist. Back in 1921, when it was apparent that the United States was not going into the League of Nations, Colonel Mandel House, who was the alter ego of Woodrow Wilson, who had been behind getting the United States an income tax and the Federal Reserve System creating all this, he established another organization, and it was called the Council on Foreign Relations. This is not the Senate Committee by that name. This is a group of prestigious people that are members by invitation only. There have been presidents who are members of this. In fact, every president in modern times, with the exception perhaps of Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, and now Donald Trump, have been a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. What's their goal? Their goal is to promote a one-world socio-economic system and create an international banking system. And then in 1952, there was a group of people that met for the first time in Belgium at the Bilderberger Hotel. And they became known as the Bilderbergers. They were a group mainly of international bankers. What was their goal? To establish a one-world monetary system, and especially to start it with the European community in 1958. European Economic Community was founded. And their goal was to bring in and unite all of Europe and do away with all their sectarianism and have one currency, and they have succeeded so far. It hasn't been a glowing success at this point, but they're not done yet. And then in 1972, David Rockefeller, out of New York, out of the Rockefeller family, helped found the Trilateral Commission. And I'm just telling you all these things. That doesn't mean that these people have been successful, but they've had one thing in mind, and that is to form a political, social, economic system, and all the world be under one central authority. In other words, it's the dream of Nimrod. They want to make the dream of Nimrod a reality. Satan has never given up on that. When we come to the Old Testament, toward the end of it, now there are three apocalyptic books in the Bible. Do you know what I mean by apocalyptic? Apocalypse means to unveil. It means to pull the curtain back. But the significant thing about apocalyptic books, they use symbols to represent things, and the symbols are somewhere in the Bible. You find them somewhere else in the Bible. Daniel is the first apocalyptic book, the second part of Daniel. And this is the second apocalyptic book. It is the book of Zechariah. Turn with me to Zechariah chapter number 5. And we're going to read a prophecy of what's going to happen to this one world socio-economic system that Nimrod was attempting to create. And this one world religion, we're going to read what's going to happen to this, and then we'll read the fulfillment of it in Revelation 17 and 18. Now, in chapter number 5, we see the prophecy open with a huge flying object. I'm sure that Zechariah, when he first looked at this, said, "Man, there's the first UFO." An unidentified flying object, but then it became identified to him. It was a flying scroll. Now this scroll was not rolled up. It was just a sheet. And it was 30 feet long and 15 feet wide. That's the exact dimensions of the inner court of the tabernacle proper. And on this scroll were written judgments on one side and on the other side, on both sides. And we read how that it was God's judgments against the wicked in the land. And that's His land. Then I turned and lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, a flying robe. And he said unto me, What seest thou? And I answered, I see a flying robe. The length thereof is 20 cubits, the breadth thereof 10 cubits. Then said he unto me, This is the curse that goeth forth over the face of the whole earth, for every one that stealeth shall be cut off, as on this side according to it, and every one that sweareth shall be cut off as on that side according to it. And I will bring it forth, saith the Lord of hosts, and it shall enter into the house of the thief, and into the house of him that sweareth falsely by my name, and it shall remain in the midst of his house, and shall consume it with the timber thereof, and with the stones thereof. So basically, this is a scroll of judgment. And God is prophesying through Zechariah that he is going to judge the wicked, and he's going to remove them from the earth. Now, the second part of this prophecy begins in verse 5, and this is going to be the removal of wickedness itself from the land and from the entire earth. Now notice he says, Then the angel that talked with me went forth and said unto me, Lift up now thine eyes and see what is this that goeth forth. And I said, What is it? And he said, This is an ephah that goeth forth. He said, Moreover, this is their resemblance throughout all the earth. Now what is an ephah? An ephah is a measuring basket. If I'm in a commercial enterprise and I'm selling something to you by the bushel, then I would use an ephah to measure this with. So it's an instrument of commercialism. This is commercialism. We talked about the Jews becoming very commercialized, didn't we? And notice he says on the inside there was lifted up a talent of lead. Now, whatever was in this basket, they had a huge cover that was made of lead that was heavy to keep this contents inside this basket. And he says, I looked, and behold, this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of an ephah. There was a woman sitting in there. And he said, This is wickedness. This woman was wickedness personified. She was identified with wickedness. And it says, with instructions, he cast it in the midst of the ephah, and he said, Cast the weight of lead upon the mouth thereof, shut her in. Then lifted up mine eyes, and there came two women, and these are demonic forces, and the wind was in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork. How many of you remember reading about the clean and the unclean animals and birds over in the book of Leviticus? The stork was an unclean bird, and so therefore these represented demonic-like people. And they lifted up the ephah between the earth and the heaven. Then said I to the angel that talked with me, Whither do these bear the ephah? And notice verse 11. And he said unto me, To build it a house in the land of Shinar, and it shall be established and set there upon her own base. This woman, which represents an entire system, is to be taken back to the land of her origin, where God is going to destroy it. Now let's read the fulfillment of that. Go with me to Revelation chapter 17 and chapter number 18, and we're going to look at the fulfillment of this. Now in Revelation 17, you remember that there was one of the seven angels, it says in verse 1, that had the seven vials, that came and talked with me, saying, Come here, I'm going to show you the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters. And last week we read about that. And this system of wickedness was represented by a woman, and there was a name that was written on the forehead of this woman. Verse number 5, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots, and abominations of the earth. This is the woman of Zechariah chapter 5. This is the system that was established by Nimrod, the father of idolatry, in Genesis chapter 10. This is the system that has existed continually in one form or another from that day until this, and exists even today. You know why that we have so much opposition to an outsider who won the presidency, who has vowed to blow up the system in Washington, D.C.? You know why there's so much opposition? Because it's satanically backed.
Yeah, you're right.
This system that's in Washington, D.C., and it's in London, and it's in Moscow, and it's in Tokyo, and it's in Peking, that's in all the great cities of the world, one system trying to get together, trying to unite, trying to get everyone under one central authority politically, trying to get everybody under one system monetarily. This system is the woman that we're reading about right here, plus the city that we read about in chapter 18. These two symbols represent this system. And I've marveled as I've watched things going on today how it is unbelievable how much opposition that this one man that's sitting in the White House is getting in trying to restore America back to her former greatness, trying to reestablish our national sovereignty, trying to reclaim these things so that we are one nation under God like we used to be. And you know, of all of the people that we probably would have selected and picked, he would have been the least likely anybody would have picked, wouldn't he? But you know, isn't it amazing how that God uses human instruments, even sometimes when they don't know they're being used?
Right.
And this is God responding, I believe, to the prayers of His people. You know, before God destroyed, I'm going to stop and just give you an account back in Ezekiel. Before God destroyed Jerusalem originally, He was looking for enough people in order to be able to stay His judgment. But He couldn't find enough. So He said, I'll tell you what. He said, there's a recording angel that had an inkhorn and that had recording instruments. He said, I want you to go through Jerusalem and I want you to put a mark on everyone who sighs and cries because of iniquity. And when the destroying angel comes through, when the armies of the Babylonians march against the city, those people will be spared. And that's a Bible principle, that God never destroys the righteous with the wicked, does He? Abraham reminded the Lord of that. He said, Lord, You're a just God and You're a holy God. You're a God that doesn't destroy the righteous with the wicked. So would You spare Sodom and Gomorrah for my nephew Lot's sake? Would You do it if there's 50 people there? He said, I'll do it. Would You do it if there's 40? I'll do it. Oh, Lord, don't get mad at me, but what about if it's just 30? All right, I'll do it for just 30. Well, what about 10? He got it down to 10. He said, you find 10 people, and I won't even do it for that. And they couldn't even find 10 people in Sodom and Gomorrah, and they had to go. And Jerusalem had to go. But the point is that God, I believe, does respond to His people, and if there's enough salt left to preserve, and we are the salt of the earth, God will give space. He will postpone the judgment. And I think that we are living on borrowed time today. I think we got an extension of time because there was enough people got a hold of God in this last election, said this country's going the wrong way. We have got to do something to bring it back. We've got to stand up for what's right, and there were enough. And thank God for them. But there's going to come the time when there will not be enough and the judgment's going to fall. Now, here's this woman. And this woman has sit upon seven mountains. Now, the early Babylonian kingdom of Nimrod was the prototype for all that came after. Then came the Egyptian Empire. Then came the Assyrian Empire. And then came the new Babylonian Empire. And then came the Medo-Persian Empire. And then came the Greek Empire, and then came the Roman Empire, and the last, which will be of the seven, and the eighth, which is of the seven, it says that he will go into perdition. That, my friends, is who the Bible calls the Antichrist. John calls him the Antichrist. Paul calls him the man of sin. Daniel calls him the little horn. They're all one and the same person. He will arise and come forth out of the revived Roman Empire, which this world is right now trying to put together again. And unfortunately for them, Mr. Trump put a little kink in their plans. Things have had a little setback so far. Now, what's going to happen? It says that after the globalists have had their way, and they have gotten what they want, and the world is organized, especially the West, under the Antichrist, then they'll turn on this woman and make her desolate, and eat her flesh and burn her with fire, for the Lord, for God, hath put in their hearts to fulfill His will. And I'm glad that the heart of the king is in the hand of the Lord, and He turns it with us whoever He will. So, this one world religion, once it's accomplished its purpose, will finally be destroyed through the people who were using her, upon whom she set. Now, chapter 18. And after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily, with strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, and is become the habitation of devils, and hold of every foul spirit, and cage of every unclean and hateful bird. I'll tell you what, isn't that an apt description of what this system that I've been talking about has become in our day? Let's just take a little piece of it. Let's take Washington, D.C. Would you not agree with me that it's become the habitation of devils? That it's become the hold of every foul spirit? That it's become a cage of every unclean and hateful bird? That's the system now personified as a city. This is the commercial side of it. God is going to bring it down. And He says that all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. And then I heard another voice. And this voice says, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her even as she hath rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works, and the cup which she hath filled to her double. In one day, verse 8, will her plagues come. In one day, verse 10, alas, that great city of Babylon, that mighty city, in one hour her judgment is come. And the merchants will weep and they will mourn. All of this earth will mourn, the merchants of gold, the merchandise of silver, precious stones, 17 idols, finally the souls of men, men who sold their souls to the system. All of it's going down in one hour. Verse 17, for in one hour so great riches is come to nothing. And every shipmaster and all the cap company and ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, alas, that great city wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness, for in one hour is she made desolate. But while there's weeping on earth, there's rejoicing in heaven. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. And then a mighty angel took a stone like a great millstone and demonstrated how that she's going down. And with one big fell swoop, he cast that stone into the sea, and it made a huge splash, and then it disappeared beneath the waters. And so he says, thus will be the destruction. The word has come out of. You know, I'm afraid sometimes we get too comfortable in this world, don't we? And we get too comfortable in this system in which we live. And we've benefited in this system as others have benefited. But he says, don't drive your stakes down too deep. Back in World War I, it was a trench warfare over in France. But they would fight in trenches and they would move up from one trench to the next trench. And they were constantly digging trenches, fighting a trench warfare. And one old top sergeant came down the line and he told the men, he said, "Boys," he says, "don't drive those stakes down too deep," meaning the stakes in their tents. "Because don't you know we're going to pull them up in the morning." And God's word to us is, don't drive your stakes down too deep in this world, because we're moving up in the morning, aren't we? Look over with me in 1 John chapter number 2, verse 15. "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world." We're in the world, but we're not of the world, right? Don't get too in love with the world. Don't drive your stakes down too deep. Don't put all of your treasure down here. Send it on up ahead, and you'll meet it when you get over there. "If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." That's this mystery Babylon. That's this satanic system that was created in the days of Nimrod. "And the world passeth away in the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever." You know, it's awfully easy to get caught up in this culture in which we live, isn't it? It's awfully easy to forget what our mission is. Paul says we are ambassadors for Christ, aren't we? We are representatives of a government from a far country. We are down here representing that government. We are on a mission. And our mission is to inform everyone that we can that there is a new world coming, all right enough. But it's not going to be the new world order that this world is looking for. It's going to be a new world order from heaven, isn't it? And we are to try to make citizens out of people that are citizens of this world and get them a dual citizenship, because we want them to be citizens of that world along with us, right? So we must never forget our mission. This is what happened and began in Genesis 10. And this is how it all ends in Revelation 17 and 18. I'm glad that even though there was one man that went and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, yet nevertheless, even though God has allowed it to go on all these years, He's going to bring it to a sudden end. In 1 hour, she's going down, and good is going to reign, and the land is going to be cleansed. That woman is going to be carried back to the place of her origin and destroyed before Jesus comes to set up His millennial kingdom. I'm looking forward to that, aren't you?
Amen.
"When the trumpet of the Lord shall sound, and time shall be no more." Can you sing that with me? "When the morning breaks eternal, bright and fair. When the saved of earth shall gather o'er on the other shore, and the roll is called, yonder I'll be there. When the roll is called, yonder, when the roll is called, yonder, when the roll is called, yonder, when the roll is called, yonder I'll be